All right, good morning. Yeah, and thanks very much. It's a privilege to be at the conference and to speak, and thanks very much for that. So I'd like to talk about just a couple. So first I'll talk about some work on some vesicular emulsions that are shear thickening, and then I'll talk about our method for doing a real sands at very high shear rate. All right, so the existing equipment for up to shear rates that are a few thousand, we use a rheometer on the beam line, and then the experiment I'll show will be where the beam is projected along the radius of the direction. And so the first system that I want to just show briefly is an oil and water system with this surfactant here, and it forms a microemulsion phase and an aqueous phase. And then if you here, this is the sands from this microemulsion phase, and so this can be fit with a tubular tray by continuous emulsion model. If you shake this up, then it forms a gelatinous material with probed by dynamic rheology shows a storage modulus higher than the viscous modulus. And so what happens is the microemulsion gets broken up, and under shear, it seems that it forms into vesicles. And there's been some work on some vesicular emulsions that form multimillar vesicles. But here, this we think is forming these unilamellar vesicles. And the thickened state is when the vesicles are concentrated enough that they form some structured phase. And here you see a lattice structure. So this is looking at a variety of shear rates. And you see that for a relaxed system, then as you shear, you can get a substantial increase in the viscosity as you get to this system where it then forms this packed structure. And so what we have then is if you look at this pattern, the ring is getting progressively larger, meaning that the vesicles are getting more and more refined to smaller size by the shear. And so then as they're the smallest, then the volume fraction that they occupy is small enough that this is a melted state. And then as this shear rate is less and the vesicles are a little bit bigger, then they occupy more volume and they pack into this ordered structure. And then before that, the vesicles are larger yet, and initially there's the layering and not this packed structure. So this string of pearls is on this branch of increasing. So this vesicle size then is being refined in this direction, but and so there's a specific size in which this thickening happens. And that doesn't depend on The type of oil, we'll use hexane or dodecane or decane, and nor the amount. That could be like a 1-to-1 surfactant oil ratio, or you could have 4 times as much oil, and it still gives these same sizes. And so in order to adjust the size, it's the amount of surfactant that is the relevant parameter that controls the amount of interface that you have in the system once it's refined into the vesicle phase. All right, so that is a little bit about some emulsions. But now for a higher shear rate, we are using slit rheometry. And this is a initial implementation of this. And then the next slide will show a higher pressure version. But you know, we drive the fluid with a syringe and then measure the pressure drop across the of the cell. And so then it gives us the rheology measurements, and then we do the neutron scattering through that cell. Here is a higher pressure upgrade that we haven't yet tested, but the pump system we have, it'll go up to 350 bar. And then so then that should give us this performance. So with a variety of different slit heights for the rectangular channel, then we could get in this range of 10 to the 5 or better in terms of shear rate. And in terms of viscosity, here is up to a Pascal second or beyond for a little bit slower shear rate. And so, yeah, we then have a thicker cell, and then this then is sealed in with some fittings. This would fit in that place there. And then this is a picture of what we have. So as I say, this isn't tested yet, but we have results from the earlier version, which I'll show in the next several slides. And so for those, the first experiments we did are on worm-like micelles, and so I'll just describe those experiments. With a higher pressure system, then that should be suitable for some dense emulsion and dense suspensions. And so we look forward to doing those experiments in the future. All right, so these worm-like micelle systems are from these anionic surfactants. And these are in assaulted solutions so that they form these entangled worm-like micelles. And in shear, there's a onset of alignment, which occurs above a Weisenberger number of 1. And that's the dominant response that we observe. And there's more details about the response that we would like to probe as we get into this. But now, just a little bit about about that alignment that I showed on the last slide, was that alignment increased with shear rate. Well, that alignment is determined by having a measure of the anisotropy of the scattering pattern. And to understand details of what's happening to the other micelles, we will need to account for the whole two-dimensional pattern. But just as a preliminary measure, I want to point out that we're taking the data in this range of Q, so near the persistence length of the micelles, and in that range of Q, then this is the intensity of the scattering as a function of azimuthal angle around that. And so then we measure an alignment parameter from that. Okay. And so here this is the viscosity data as a function of shear rate, and then this alignment. And comparing measurements from the couette geometry and the geometry of the slit rheometer. Okay, and so these x's here are the alignment factor in this geometry here, and then looking at the scattering through this geometry here, then we get these solid circles. But just as the rheological data can be analyzed to isolate the stress at the wall, so the scattering data can also be analyzed to get the near wall behavior. And so these solid symbols here, they get converted to these open blue symbols, and then you see the match between the structure that we observe here and the structure that we observe near the wall in the Poiseuille flow. And so although there's this shear rate spectrum, we want to then be that out. All right, so then how can we section this? This is been done before, but I want to show you a couple of methods. So here, this is flow through the slit. One method of sectioning, of course, is to have a narrow aperture, and as you project the beam along this broad face, then this would be what you measure in the center of the channel, and these towards the edge. So you can section it using that narrow aperture. But you can also section it when the beam is projected through the velocity gradient direction. And this then is a sectioning that depends on the stress profile that is across the section. And basically, if you take experiments at two different times, and two different stress conditions, the difference when you go from a lower stress condition to a higher stress condition, the only difference is what's near the wall. And so I'll explain that in the next couple slides, but it's the same way, same reasoning for how the rheology data is analyzed. But this is two different scattering patterns at two different stresses. They have a ratio between them in terms of the stress. Based on that, then we can do subtraction between these two patterns and get this, which is the structure near the wall, and then this matches what is observed for that same near wall shear rate in the couette geometry. All right, so this it comes about because in a pressure-driven flow through the channel, we have a linear a stress profile, and when the pressure is increased from one state to another, the difference comes only from the highest stress near the channel walls. All right. So this was shown very nicely with some experiments that Julie Cornfield published. These are polyolefins that have been flown through a slit. These are four different stress conditions, and these are the X-ray diffraction through that whole pattern. And if you get this data here through that whole section, and then this data here through this whole section, But this one here is at a higher stress. If you take the difference between these two, then you're measuring the diffraction which is coming just from the near wall region, and that's this right here. Okay. And is the same analysis that we do. Now, I want to point out that this is an analysis that can fail, and this would fail whenever the scattering depends on position independently of stress. So let's say if you were flowing a suspension through there and there was particle migration, and then that particle migration is something that's going to be from rate dependence and not dependent uniquely on the stress, then that would lead to a condition where this difference between scattering patterns wouldn't isolate the scattering that's at the wall. So here's just another, this is the same data here, showing a variety of different conditions. And then, of course, we can go to a higher stress conditions and higher shear rate and get data that you can't get with the Couette geometry. So this is a quantitative comparison where these results here match what we see by rheostands. And so although this is quantitative, it becomes a little bit more clear if we look at some one-dimensional plots on this graph here. So the data up at the top is from Couette geometry. The data below is a comparison. These ones right here, these are both with the slit rheometer at the high stress and the low stress. All right, so here what we have is a plot of I of Q. At a quiescent condition, we get that scattering which is in the middle. Then when we align it, then if you look at the intensity in the direction of enhanced alignment, then you enhanced scattering, you get that top curve. And then, but if you do a circular average, now instead of the being just like the isotropic, it's suppressed. That's because the alignment of the scattering is strongest normal to the direction of the micelles, and so if you align it, then you take away some of that scattering, and so the overall intensity goes down. And another way that you can see that is here at rest. If we look at the azimuthal scattering around there, then you see that the area of the peak above is smaller than what is underneath, and that's because of this dependence on the total scattering being affected by the alignment distribution. Now, so this black data here is the same thing that's up here, these open triangles. That's the Couette data. Here, these are, this is the red data. This is the blue data from the alignment. These are below what you have for the Couette data because we're looking at through the whole section. But if we take the difference between these two, then the green data then matches up exactly. And so this is then the scattering that's from just the near wall region. Again, this is in the azimuthal direction. The blue data subtracted from the red data gives us the green, which then matches the Couette data. Something briefly before I finish is that this is again looking at the simple alignment factor, but we see that when the when my cells in the quiescent state are of different length, but the solution conditions are similar, then if we plot the alignment versus shear stress, then there's a peak in the alignment where the alignment drops off beyond at higher rates, where that converges. And so that leads us to this question: is this peak in alignment associated with stress-induced micelle breakup? That's a question that needs some other data, other analysis. This is we have scattering from the other direction where we have this a narrow aperture, and so that is similar, but it is a different scattering direction. And so if we look near the wall, you can see if I go back and forth between the different directions, you can see the alignment tilting slightly towards the velocity gradient. All right. And then, so I'd like to just summarize that first I told you a little bit about some shear thickening emulsions, and then concentrated on this instrument that we're developing for Rio sands at very high shear rate, where we then take advantage of measuring the scattering near the wall in the region where it then is matching up with what you could get by the couette. But then, of course, this you can flow faster and then probe to much higher shear rates. And then just one little advertisement for somebody else's work. In case anyone is frustrated with LabVIEW like I have been, there is an interesting framework that we're just now using that has been developed by Brian Durso at Montana State. And yeah, you can make GUIs and run your instruments, and it's a nice alternative, I think. So I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Steve, those are really impressive results. Those are hellishly high shear rates. Do you do anything to control the temperature at those rates?
We don't have shear-induced heating. The Brinkman numbers are still small, that is something that is important to always take care of. So far, we have not focused on temperature control, but that will be a really important thing to do. And so with that cell holder, then of course we can do some temperature control on that, but we also would need to control the temperature of the fluid in the reservoir as well. But yeah, that's a very important thing to pay attention to. Yep.
Jim? Hi. Very nice, but your PIV data, doesn't it suggest more like plug flow than position?
Okay, so that I was plotting the velocity along the width direction. So that was in the narrow direction. Then, depending on the flow condition, it would be either parabolic or some distorted flow form because of the non-Newtonian behavior. But yeah, so what I plotted was in the other direction, along the vorticity.
Okay, because at those shear rates, you could well get something that's like a block of, it's not viscosity in the normal sense.
Yeah, so we also have done more measurements of the whole velocity profile. And this we use holographic 3D particle tracking. And there are certain conditions where we do see some, you know, with some other fluids that are more concentrated and more strongly shear banding than, these weren't shear banding actually, then you can see some different flow profiles. Daniel
Bong. Do I understand correctly that for your shear thickening emulsions, you mixed the bicontinuous phase with the aqueous phase?
Yes. Well, the system is all mixed up together. And then if you let it rest, then the bicontinuous phase will rise to the top. But then, yeah, before loading in the rheometer, you need to then do, as you say, mix the bicontinuous phase with the excess aqueous.
But is it then shear thickening? I mean, is making mayonnaise from water and oil?
That's right.
Is that shear thickening?
It's
clear that the viscosity of the mayonnaise is larger than the viscosity
that's right.
Of the oil and the vinegar. But
that's right. Yeah. Yeah, so it's it's essentially through that process, then you're adjusting the effective volume fraction of the dispersed phase. Yeah.
Any more questions for Steve? Are you all waiting for lunch? Okay, well, let's thank Steve and all the other speakers in the session.
Thank you.